Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Moed Katan Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur today, the second line from the top of Daf Yud Ches. During our previous shiur, at the end of our previous shiur, we spoke about the removal of fingernails, cutting one's nails on Yom Tov, on Chol HaMoed, and in Avelus. We continue with that theme. Pinchas Achvo Demar Shmuel, Pinchas the brother of Shmuel, Isra Le Milsa. That is an expression meaning that he became an Ovel. In other words, a close relative of Pinchas passed away. Earl Shmuel Le Mishal Taimo Mine. Shmuel entered to speak to him, to comfort him. Chazinu Le Tufri Dahavu Nefishan. Shmuel noticed that Pinchas's nails were very long. Tufre are the fingernails. Omar le amai lo shakuslu. Shmuel asks, why haven't you cut your nails? You'll notice that we have a long bracketed section, and on the side we have a note. Achrei hasugrayim hagorma amshicho be'ech linhog b'til siponayim. After the brackets, the Gemara will continue dealing with the issue of how to deal with nails. Within the brackets, the details of the story continue between Shmuel and his brother. So, just to note, if you skip the brackets momentarily, you see Sovor Mine Diyad in Deregelo. The thought was that the heter for fingernail removal, as Shmuel was conveying, applies to the hand nails as opposed to the toenails. And Omar Rav Onan Bar Tachlifa, and the discussion continues with Rav Onan pointing out that Shmuel had taught that there is no difference. Now, that having been said, we continue in the brackets. Shmuel, having noticed that that his brother's fingernails were very long, why didn't you cut them? Omar lay. So Pinchas says back, "E b'di day have." That means if you, that he's speaking to his brother Shmuel, would have been an ovel. Me mezalzelus be kulihai. Would you have treated your avelus so offhandedly, so lightly? In other words, Pinchas perceived that the non-fingernail clipping was an act of honor. That's how you honor the occasion or the event, the situation of being in mourning. So Pinchas said it this way, if it would have been by you, would you have been so offhanded? Well, that's not the way to speak. You don't, if you have a catastrophe or you suffer some type of setback, one is never to, impose that even in a query form upon the next person. And the Gemara says, "Havoi kishkoga shiyotze milifnei hasholet." It was as an error that came forth from the leader. The Isra be milsa b'Shmuel. The expression kishkoga shiyotze is a pasuk from Keheles, and it's used in rabbinic license as well. So it's like a, and if you want to say it's like was like through the slip of a tongue, so to speak, or an unintentional statement that he made, but yet it took effect. And the Isra Bey Milsa B'Shmuel, you see that expression again, Isra Bey Milsa, it's an expression indicating Avelus, mourning then befell Shmuel. All Pinchas Achvo the Mishal Taim Amine, and now tables are turned, and Pinchas is going to comfort his brother Shmuel, who now became an Ovel, a mourner. Shaklinu L'Tufrei Chavtinu L'Ape. Well, he took his fingernails and cast them in front of him. Omar Lei, And Shmuel, having done this, he was trying to demonstrate to his brother the mistake, the error that he made. Amarle, and Shmuel continues to say, Leslach, do you not hold bris kruso lisfasayim, that there is a covenant upon one's lips, meaning that that which one utters, even if it was unintended, can take effect. One has to be very careful with one's speech. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan Minayin should bris krusulos fine. Rabbi Yochanan says, from where do we know this concept that there is a covenant that is made upon or with one's lips, that that which one says, the mere emitting of words, can have an effect. Shenemar by Yom Avram El Norov. Avram, on his way to sacrifice his son Yitzchak, and the Akedas Yitzchak story, he says to his Norov, to his servants, Shvu lochem poyim hachamor, you sit, you stay here with the donkey, vani vanar nelcho ad koi, and we, and I and my boy, my son, will go to the mountain, v'nishtachave nashuv alechem, and I will we will bow, and notice we in the plural, v'nashuv alechem, and we will return. Now, at the time that that Avraham said that to that to the youth that were with him, at the time that he said that, he didn't know that he was going to come back with his son. He had instructions from the Almighty to sacrifice his son, and Avram would be coming back alone. Yet, when he spoke using the plural form. And Istaya Milsa the Hodr Travayo, and in fact, it worked out that they both came back. Technically speaking, Avram could have simply said to them, just wait. But he added, wait, and we will bow, and we will come back. So you see that what one utters, even if it's unintentional, or even one has thoughts that are to the contrary, but the words that one emits have power. Like we learned in Maseches Megillah, one of the greatest pieces of advice, Mila b'chad mashtuka b'train, speaking is worth one, but silence is worth two. Savor mine, so the thinking was, diyad in the regel lo, that it's mutter to cut one's fingernails, but not one's toenails. And the reason for thinking that is because the long fingernails are disgusting. Toenails are not necessarily visible. They're covered. One wears socks or closed shoes. So that doesn't, we can't say that it's something that's disgusting, but long fingernails are. So the thinking was that the heter was the heter, the permission of removing or clipping one's nails applies only to the hands, not to the feet, to the toes. Omar of Onan bar Tachlifa, the difra shlimidei de Shmuel, was explained to me by Shmuel, lo yishno diyad v'lo yishno deregel. No distinction is made between the hand and the feet. Omar of Chio bar Ashi, Omar Rav, ubeginustura oser. However, using a scissors, that is forbidden. Omar of Shomon bar Abba, habo ki'imna kamei de Rabbi Yochanan be midrasha b'cholol shomoyed. I was present in front of Rabbi Yochanan in the Beis Medrash on Chol HaMoed. V'shaklinu l'tufrei b'shinei. He bit his fingernails off, and v'zarkinu, and he threw them. Shma minotlas. From here we learn three things. Shma minot mutter litol tziponayim b'chol HaShemoed. That it's mutter to shorten one's fingernails on Chol HaMoed. U'shma minot ein bohen mishum mius. And they aren't something that we would say is a source of something disgusting. And Rashi says, "Midishoka levishine," from the fact that he bit them off with his teeth, that's not considered something that's an act of disgusting, of repulsiveness. Ushma mino, the third conclusion, mutu lizorkon, that it's mutter to throw them on the floor. The Gemara asks, "Aini, is that so?" V'hat Tanya, we have we not learned Shloshitvarim Nemru B'tziponayim? There are three points that have been said in the context of nails. Hakovron Tzadik, Sarfon Chosid, Zorkon Rosha. One who buries them is considered a righteous person. Sarfon is someone who burns them is even on a higher level. Burning the cut fingernails is a chosid, is even a high, is considered even a more pious individual. And Zorkon, but one who throws them, and we dashed underline this, is a rosh, is considered wicked. So how could Rabbi Yochanan have cast his fingernails off on the floor of the Beis Medrash? The Gemara answers, Taimo Mai, why is someone considered wicked for throwing his fingernails? Shemo Tavor Aleim Isha Ubra V'Tapil. There's a feeling, there's a concept in the Talmudic literature that a pregnant woman who walks over cut fingernails is subject to miscarrying. And therefore, someone who wantonly throws his cut fingernails on the floor, he is endangering, he's subjecting pregnant women to miscarriage. So he's considered wicked for not caring about them. Yes, but all the same, Isha, Bay, Midrasha, Lo Shichanos. We have a little arrow, and you can align this with the arrow above. The Gemara is answering that as far as Rabbi Yochanan's behavior is concerned, he threw them in the Beis Medrash, and it's not common for women to walk through Batei Medrash. Therefore, his act of throwing them wasn't endangering any women. You might say, but still, how could he throw them on the floor? At times they're swept. Mechanshi is they're swept, and then whatever's swept is thrown outside. And once again, the problem of the pregnant women walking over them could arise. The one says, no, that wouldn't be a problem. Kevonti ishtini ishtini. Once the location is changed, the danger of the cast fingernails is only at their initial landing spot, where they landed after you threw them. However, if after you threw them and they landed at spot A, and afterwards swept to point B, there is no longer the danger posed that we spoke about before with regard to the pregnant women. As we go on in the Gemara, you notice we have some markings, and on the side, we have under our Mivneh heading, you'll notice a diamond with a colored in tip. That's Havlotas Shemos. We're highlighting names, and this Gemara will be highlighting Rav and Shmuel. And also, we have another marking, a crown shape. They represent Memros Shel Avitul Safra Mishmei Derav. This is the gentleman's name was Avitul Safra, in the name of Rav. So we have a number of comments that he makes as we go on in the Gemara. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav Zug Bo Mechamson Lifnei Rebbe. A Zug is a pair, two people, came from Chamson. That's the name of a place to visit Rebbe. Marzutra Masni. Marzutra teaches this in a Tanaic source without Rav Yehuda, instead of Rav Yehuda Marav. This source says Zug Bo Mechamson Lifnei Rebbe Ubikshu Mimenu Tziponayim V'Hitir Lahem. Now here we can't translate literally, but it means they asked of him a question regarding cutting fingernails in a state of mourning, and he, Rebbe, was matir. He was lenient, or he allowed them to do so. The imbikshu mimenu safa hitir lahem. And had they asked about trimming one's mustache, the hair growing around one's lips, above one's lips, the mustache, that's the safa, he would have matir, he would have allowed that. Ushmuel Omar Afbikshu Mimenu Safa Vihitr Lam. Shmuel's version of this is, in fact, the Zug, this pair, asked Rebbe about the mustache, and he was matir, the trimming of the mustache. Omar Avital Safra, we should point out that even though haircuts and shaving is something that's forbidden for a mourner, but the mustache, and that if it's too long, so it interferes with one's eating, and it's unpleasant, it's disgusting, and therefore there is a heter for its trimming. Avital safra mishmei derav. Let's read that again. Omar avital safra mishmei derav. Safa mizovis lezovis. Let's take a look at Rashi. Mizovis lezovis. Lezovis literally is a corner. It says misoif hapeh lesoif acher mutur legaleach. From one edge of the mouth to the other edge of the mouth is mutur to shave it. Sharei malkeves achilo ushtia umois. If it's too long, so it prevents eating and drinking, and it becomes disgusting. Omar Rabbi Ami ubesafa hameakeves. As we explained, it's a case where the hair, if it's too long, it's that part of the mouth, that part of the hair that prevents clean or hygienic eating if it's not cared for. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Li Didi Kisofa Hamakevis Domi Li. Rashi says, Ula Didi Danino Datoy, I am finicky. Kol hasofa kisofa makeves domi. All parts of my mustache are considered makeves. Danino li daiti. I am a particular. I am fussy. I'm sensitive, overly sensitive, or I'm very sensitive. So all of my mustache, not just a particular point on it, but the whole mustache is considered makeves for me. Makeves literally is that which prevents eating. So he's saying that it's not limited to just one spot, but for me, my whole mustache is like that. V'omar avitul safra mishmei derav paroshei bimei Moshe. Paro is the title of Egyptian monarch. So the Egyptian monarch, the ruler that it was at the time of Moshe. Hu amo uzukonoi amo uparmashtokoi amo vazeres. Now here we have an example of an agoda that, if you take it literally, so fine. But on the other hand, it's probably something to be understood on a deeper level. So all we're going to do is translate it, and with that, we'll say disclaimer. Appreciate that there's probably something on a deeper level. But the translation is that that Egyptian ruler at the time of Moshe, he measured a height of one amo. That's very, very short. It's a half a meter in height. And he had a beard that was an amo. And his male organ was an amo and a zeres. It's an amo and a fraction. L'kayim mashenemar, to as a fulfillment of that which it says in the pasuk, ushval anoshim yakim Allah, and the lowliest of men I will arise above you. The Omar avitol safra mishmei derav paroshe bimei Moshe, the Pharaoh at the time of Moshe, amgushi hoyam, he was a sorcerer. There Rashi points out that as far as what Amgushi means, he says there's a machlokis in Masechus Shabbos. One says that he was a sorcerer, as we said, and the other says that he was a blasphemer. And what is the indication of that? Shenemar, the pasuk says, Hine Yotzei Hamaimo. The Almighty told Moshe Rabbeinu that Pharaoh is going to be going to the water. And either he was going to the water for practicing black magic, or he was declaring that he was the creator of it as if he was a god form. The Mishnah mentioned that amongst the exceptions that we make for allowing washing on Chol HaMoed, those who come from abroad. Before we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, a topic heading with a structural note. A volcano shape will appear with a dashed underline that we're going to be featuring here as well. There's Shnei Halachas Kulos, Shel Rabbi Yochanan, two laws, they have to be leniencies of Rabbi Yochanan in Kibbutz B'Chol HaMoed regarding washing clothing on Chol HaMoed. And the inverted shape, the inverted volcano shape, Kushios al dine Rabbi Yochanan mi Mishnah. So it'll be challenging Rabbi Yochanan's teachings from things that we saw in the Mishnah. the Gemara. Omar Rav Asi, Omar Rav Yochanan. Mi she'ein lo ela choluk, echod mutur l'chabse b'chol shemoyt. One who has only one choluk. Choluk was a standard garment that people wore. We'll call it a tunic or a shirt. He's someone who has only one choluk, has only one shirt. That's all he owns. He is allowed to wash it out on Chol HaMoed. Masiv Rav Yirmiyah challenges Rav Asi's quote. He says, Elu mechabsin b'moed, haba minas hayam v'chulei. And these are those that are allowed to wash clothing during Chol HaMoed. And the Mishnah mentioned a few examples of that. We saw people who left incarceration, who came from abroad. But hani in, only those that are listed off in the Mishnah, mi she'en lo ela choluk echod lo. However, this new category that Rabbi Yochanan introduced, someone who is the owner of a singular choluk, that's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Amalei Rav Yankov, the Rav Yirmiyah. Asbrolos. So Rav Yankov says to Rav Yirmiyah, I will explain to you. Masnisen, as far as the law of the Mishnah is concerned, they gave us a list of people that are allowed to wash during Chol HaMoed. The Mishnah actually represents an additional leniency. Afagav de Isle Trey Umitanfi. Someone who, let's say, who left incarceration, he might have had a few articles of clothing, but if they are all dirty, so he's allowed to wash all of them. So the Mishnah's examples refer to people for whom we're going to be lenient, even if it involves washing multiple articles of clothing, as opposed to the din of Rav Asi, where we're allowing washing during Chol HaMoed, but our allowance there is for a person that has only one article of clothing. Shalach Rav Yitzchok Bar Yankiv Bar Giyuri Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan Kli Pishton Mutur Lechavson B'cholo Shomoyed. Kli Pishton are linen clothing are mutur to be washed during Chol HaMoed, and it's explained by Rashi that these Kli Pishton are clothing that don't require a great deal of effort in washing them. You might want to note that Rashi that we just cited is at the top of Omid Beis. So Mosiv Rava challenges this teaching. Mitpachos Hayodaim uMitpachos Hasforim. These are mentioned as things that one is allowed to wash during Chol HaMoed. We'll say they're hand towels and Mitpachos Hasforim. It could be we saw two girsos of that, either it's Saporim or Sforim, barber's sheets or certain Sefer Torah related fabrics. Those are hani in. We're at the top of Omid Beis. Hani in clay pishton lo. So the Mishnah gave allowances, we'll say exceptions to the rule of washing prohibition. But in that list of exceptions, one did not find linens. Omar le Abaye. So Abaye answers the question that was posed by Rava. So Abaye responds. Masnisen, the Mishnah that has its limitations to Mitbachos Hasforim, Mitbachos Hayadayim, Afilu Tishar Mini. There is that is an allowance with regard to all other kinds of fabrics as well. So even there is a limitation, but there's an additional, we should say, a leniency that is included in the Mishnah's exception. That being even other kinds of fabrics, so that if you're dealing with multiple fabrics, different kinds of fabrics, so we'll say only if you're dealing with mitpachos hasfarim or mitpachos yadayim. However, with regard to linen articles or linen fabrics, then we're not limiting you to the type of article, simply because linen is something that's easy to wash, and it doesn't violate the spirit of Chol HaMoed, which, as we've seen so many times in this Masichta, is where we try to reduce the amount of exertion or effort one makes. Omar Bar Hidya L'didi chazili yama shel Tiberia. So Bar Hidya reports that I saw the lake of Tiberias, Kinneret Lake, the mafki lo mashichli demoni kisna b'chola demayada, that people carried out buckets full of linens to on Cholomoid to be washed. And so he was citing this as a basis for the leniency that we just mentioned. Omar Maskif Lo Abaye. Abaye challenges this and says, who says Man Leim Olon De Barotzen Chachomim Avdi? Who says that they were behaving with the approval of the Chachomim, of the sages, of the rabbis? Maybe what they were doing was not something that the rabbis approved of. So that if you're trying to cite as a basis for what Rav Asi taught before in the name of, or let's say more accurately, Rav Yitzchak Bar Yankiv taught in the name of Rav Yochanan, that it's mutter to wash clay pishtal l'chol ha'moed, Rabbi says, I'm sorry, I don't accept proofs from what the rank and file, what commoners do. Just because commoners do something, it doesn't mean that that is with the approval of the sages. Now, Tosis makes an interesting comment. Maskif law man le malon. If you are following the names in this Gemara discussion, Abaye himself seemed to back up Rabbi Yochanan's din in the face of Rava's question. So you would think that Abaye accepted Rabbi Yochanan's teaching about the heter, the permission of washing linens. So Tosfos says, "V'afal gavda by gufei shoni liel masis and libra Rabbi Yochanan." Even though Abaye himself explained Rabbi Yochanan in the face of the question raised from the Mishnah by Rava, eino sover kein. He doesn't personally hold that way. And here you have an illustration of something very common in the Talmud. The Talmud is very interested in truth and in accuracy, and that if you are going to raise a question, your question has to be solid or irrefutable. And if it can be refuted, so I might refute a question, not necessarily an indication that I hold by that which I'm trying to defend. But nevertheless, in the interest of honesty and accuracy, questions must be strong enough that they cannot be refuted. But if you are raising a question from a source that can be re-explained, I will do so, says Abaye in this case, even if I don't necessarily hold by the original teaching personally. And also, parenthetically, you see something else in this little comment of Abaye of Man Leimel and Rosh Chachamim Avdi, this the tendency of people to bring proof to halachic behavior, to acceptable halachic practice, simply by virtue of the fact of that's what one sees everyone doing. That you can see is not necessarily solid ground on which to stand. There are other cases in the Shas, just in all fairness, there are other cases in the Shas that you see the expression "poke chazi my ami dabar," go out and see what the people do. One should note, however, that inevitably comes on the heels of a case where the rabbis themselves have expressed doubt. There's a suffix on the part of the Rabbanim. The Rabbanim themselves have entered the picture, not coming to any solid conclusion, and they, the Rabbanim, will tell you, listen, go out and see what the people do. But once again, there's a difference between that and this particular case, when we don't see the Rabbanim getting involved in the first place, and rather Bar Hitya was trying to bring proof to halacha simply on what people were practicing. that, and as I say, that's different than the case of the other Gemaras where you see Pol Chozi Mayim Adibar. That's where the Rabbanan themselves instruct you, go out and see what people are doing. We continue now with the Mishnah, more regarding Chol HaMoed, what you are or what you're not allowed to do. The Elu Kosvin B'Moed, the following you are allowed to write during Chol HaMoed. So you see right away, if you like, right away, that's R-I without W-R, but you see right away that writing is basically forbidden on Chol HaMoed. It's, as we saw much earlier in the Masechta, that Chol HaMoed is also b'melacha, but which melachas? So that was given to the Rabbanon to define, and that's what we're seeing over here. Writing in general is forbidden, however, there are numerous exceptions, and with our counting, we've counted up to about 12 different cases. So, v'elu kosvin b'moed, the following one can write on Chol HaMoed, kiddushei noshim. These we'll say marriage documents. Rashi says, harei at mekudeshesli. This is the initial way of entering into matrimony with a woman. You can do it through a document. Kiddushei shtar, it's called. That's kiddushei noshim, v'gitin, divorce documents, v'shovrin receipts, daitiki. These are wills, matona, a gift that one is giving through a document, upruzbulin. A prusbul is a document that has relevance at the end of a sabbatical year, which dictates the end of sabbatical year, requires those who have debts to collect to release the people from paying their debt. However, if a person so desires, he can write this legal document called a prusbul, which prevents his debts from being canceled. Igros shum v'igros mazoin. Igros shum are shum has to do with evaluations, estimations in terms of value, where Beis Din at times assesses the value of different items, or in, Rashi speaks about fields. So the assessment is recorded in a document called Igros Shum. Igros Mazon, this is a document whereby one marries a woman who has daughters from a previous marriage, and he agrees to support her daughters. And he does that. He obligates himself, or he acknowledges his debt to her daughters in a document. That's Igros Mazon. Shtore Chalitza Umiyunin, documents of Chalitza, indicating a release of a woman from a levirate marriage. So instead of marrying her deceased husband's brother, she's now free to marry anyone she wants. And that's after the shoe removal ceremony that we call chalitza. This is a shtar that records that. Umi unin. This is a case of a ketana who entered a, we'll call it a rabbinic marriage, and wants to leave the rabbinic marriage. So she is mima'enis. Mi'un is she refuses to continue being married to the person that she was rabbinically married to. Here we're not getting into details behind that right now, but that's just the general title behind that. Ushtore Birurin, these are documents where Beis Din decided which portion different litigants should receive of the matter of controversy. So Birur is clarification. It has to do with Beis Din decides who gets what. Gzeros, Beis Din, these are rulings of the court. The Igros Shel Rishus. These are government edicts or commands that are issued by the government, so they can be written out on Chol HaMoed. Before we go further in the Gemara, on the side we have a nosei mivne heading, a topic heading with a structural note. A bow tie shape will appear. These are nisyonos l'sayeya l'shmuel shomer mutar la'aris isha b'chol shmuel. We're going to open up our Gemara with Shmuel saying that it is mutar for a man to enter matrimony with a woman. That's called erusin. Erusin in halacha, one should realize there are two stages of marriage. There's one whereby the initial matrimony, where a man offers something of value to a woman, or possibly a contractual agreement or intimacy, that is called erusin or kiddushin. At that point, she is now considered married legally to this man, forbidden to everyone else. However, man and wife cannot yet live together until they enter the second stage called nisuin. How to translate those words into English is something that I'll leave to you. But because the English terms that are often used to translate are somewhat misleading. The term erusin is often translated in English as engagement, but what we term engagement has almost no legal value. It's not legally binding to the state of a woman being considered legally married, but erusin or kiddushin is. So Shmuel tells us that it is mutter to enter the state of erusin, to ma'aris a woman on cholo moyed. Omar Shmuel, mutter la'aris isha b'cholo shel moyed, shemo yikadmenu acher. Here we're just going to translate. The Gemara will develop this idea as we go on. But he says, why are we allowing this to take place during cholo moyed, when after all, during cholo moyed, you would expect people are involved with the festivities and enjoyment of the holiday. What are we allowing matrimony for? So Shmuel says the reason for that is because we're afraid someone else might otherwise get in front of him or get her first. So if you have an opportunity to ma'aris a woman on Chol HaMoed, take advantage of the opportunity so as that someone else shouldn't get her before you. Lema Mesayale. Let us bring support to Shmuel. Elu kusmid b'moy kiddushay noshim. Our Mishnah, we just read it, says that you can write the kiddushay noshim document on Chol HaMoed, indicating that it's mutter to marry a woman on Chol HaMoed. My love, shtore kiddushin mamish. When the Mishnah says kiddushay noshim, is it not a reference to the actual document that creates erusin? Whereby a person writes in a document, "Hare at mikudeshesli, you are betrothed unto me." So is that not then a good source, a good basis for Shmuel? Loi. You notice we'll be using a double underline where the Gemara rejects whatever was being said, and the Gemara says no. The Mishnah was not referring to an actual document of matrimony, but rather it's a financial agreement that accompanies the marriage of a new couple, a financial document whereby the parents of the bride and groom agree to give certain amounts of money or items toward the marriage of their children. And that's what the Gemara, that's what the Mishnah meant, that you can write that on Chol HaMoed, Shtore Psikta. That's the name of the document we just described, the financial obligation document, with Rav Gidol Amar Rav. And as Rav Gidol teaches in the name of Rav, Yomar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, the following we write into a shtar, into a document. Kamo ato noisin lebincha. How much are you giving toward your son's marriage? That's what the parent of the bride asks, and the parent of the groom says, "Kach v'kach." Kama ato nosein lebitcha. Father of groom asks father of bride, "And how much are you giving toward your daughter's marriage?" Kach v'kach. And he says, "Thusly and thusly." Omdu v'kitshu konu. Upon the kiddushin, upon the actual marriage, the giving of the ring or the giving of the money, when that happens, so that kinyan, that act of acquisition, is binding upon this as well. Hein hein advarim hanitnin v'amira. In other words, the financial obligation is accomplished without an actual kinyan on it on its own. By the mere fact that they each side agreed, Amira, through speech, and no kinyan, through their speech and the subsequent marriage kinyan that took place, they become bound to what they had agreed to give each, namely each side. So that this agreement, as far as the financial obligation is concerned, there was no formal kinyan on directed on it specifically. And that's why the Gemara refers to it as something that is nikne be'amira. Be'amira literally means through speech, named without a specific kinyan on it. But before we go on though, what have we said? We've said that you cannot bring proof from the Mishnah to that which Shmuel says that it's mutir la'ares bishir b'cholamoy, because the Mishnah is not talking about a shtar erusin. Lema Meseli, we try again. Can we bring the following as support to Shmuel? It says, Ein noisin noshim. Now here, notice we've dashed on noisin. We made introductory remarks that are very important for understanding this Gemara. We said there were two stages in a marriage. There was the erusin, and then the nisuin. That's where the marriage is consummated. The couple stands under a canopy. The couple goes in and conducts and engages in intimacy. That would be called nisuin. So we are taught ein noisin noshim b'moed. We had this, of course, earlier in our masichta. Nisuin does not take place on the holiday. Lo b'slos, lo monos, lo mi'amin, eishes simcha hilo. Not first time marriages, virgin marriages, not the marriage of a widow, nor yibum, because that is a simcha. And we discussed this, of course, much earlier in our masichta, that you're supposed to be, your simcha is supposed to be directed toward the holiday and not toward marriage. So this Mishnah teaches us that you do not enter nisuin on the holiday, but we can infer ha le'areis shari, but erusin, the first stage, that would be allowed on the holiday. Just that's what Shmuel said. The Gemara rejects this. Lo mibaya ka'omar. No, just the opposite. The Mishnah here is in the lo mibaya format. Lo mibaya means I don't need to tell you. Lo mibaya la'aris. I don't have to tell you explicitly that it's usur, that it's forbidden to enter erusin. The lo kovid mitzvah. The erusin stage isn't viewed as a mitzvah. So, of course you're not going to do that during the holiday. Elo afilu lisa nami. But even the nisuin, as we mentioned in passing, that was the consummation of the marriage. It's at that point that the couple is living together as man and wife, where they can start bringing children into the world. So that it's considered the mitzvah period of ribi of procreation. But even that, the ka'ovid mitzvah is aser. So the Mishnah, when it tells me ein noisin noshim b'moed, included in that is of course ein ma'arsin. So we don't see a support for Shmuel from this source either, where we try to see it through an inference. Ta shma. So we try again. That's why we have a third bow tie shape. The Tani Debe Shmuel, the following source was taught in the Yeshiva of Shmuel. It says, Ma'arsin avolo kinsin. There, that we do have erusin on the holiday. This is a Tanaic source that came through the Yeshiva of Shmuel, but it says in this Tanaic source that Ma'arsin, but not kinsin. Kinsin is to bring in where the couple starts to live together. The Enois and Sudas Erisin, we don't have a feast or a banquet in honor of the Erisin, Velo Miyabnin, and we don't enter the Yibum marriage, the sister-in-law marrying surviving brother-in-law, they Shesimcha Hilo. But the main point is that which we dashed underline, Ma'arsin, so Shema Minah, from here we do see support to Shmuel's teaching, that it's Mutar La'areis Isha B'chol Shemoyed. Umi Omar Shmuel Shemo Yikadmenu Achir. Could Shmuel have really justified his halacha of marriage during Chol Hamoed simply because someone else, if you delay, someone else might get her first? Would Shmuel have said that? And here we're going to analyze this, and that's why we have this titled as our topic heading, our nosei, Hesber l'divrei Shmuel, that is mutal ariz ishi b'chol shemoyed, shema yakad menu acher. Because someone else, if you don't hurry up and work now, someone else might get her ahead of you. And number two, min haTorah u'min haNeviim u'min haKsuvim. The Gemara will point out that it's repeated three times in the scriptures. Me'ashem isha le'ish. We'll say predetermination. The destiny of a man and a woman to be together, that comes from the Almighty. It's heavenly ordained. And with that approach, so then why would Shmuel worry about someone else coming before you? If it's heavenly ordained, you will get the woman that you are supposed to get. The Gemara. Umi Omar Shmuel Shami Kabenu Acher. Would Shmuel have said such a thing that we're Matir Erisin del Cholomoy because someone else might get her in front of you, ahead of you? V'omar Rav Yehud Omar Shmuel. But Shmuel himself is quoted as saying, Bechol Yoyim V'Yoyim every day, Bas Kol Yoytzes V'Yomeres. A heavenly voice comes out and announces Bas Ploni L'Ploni, that the daughter of so and so is destined to marry so and so. Sode ploni leploni, and real estate also, the field, which field you get, that's announced, that's, we'll say, preordained, it's a heavenly decision. So, if that's the case, if it's heavenly ordained, bas ploni leploni, what are you worrying about? Why do you have to hasten to marry her, even on Cholomoy, because someone else might get her? So, someone else is gonna get her, she's ordained for you, not for someone else. Hello? Shemo yikadmenu acher berachamim. We're afraid that as a result of prayers, someone else can move into the picture. And here, what exactly this means, so we'll have to go through a few lines of Gemara to appreciate what Shmuel was concerned about. Kiha the Rava, as is illustrated in the following incident involving Rava. Shameluhu Gabra, Rava heard some man, the boy Rachami V'Yomar, he was praying, and Rava overheard the prayer. What was the text of the prayer? Tizdamein li planisa. He was praying to God that God should enable him to marry a specific girl, a specific woman, planisa so and so. Omar Le, Rava says, Lo tiboi rachami hochi, don't pray in that fashion, using that text. I chazio loch, lo ozlaminoch. If she is fit for you, if she's proper for you, she's not going to leave you. You will get her. V'i loy, if she is not fit for you, kofarto bashem. Literally, it means you're denying the Almighty, but that's too literal. So what Rashi explains is that if you pray for a specific girl and she's not fit for you, so Hashem is not going to want you to have her. But in the meantime, you're going to be praying for her, and your prayer is not going to be answered. And then you're going to come out to become a skeptic, a denier, a heretic, saying that the Almighty doesn't listen to prayers. So Rava was trying to put this fellow straight by saying, don't pray for a specific woman to be your wife. Bosser Hochi, afterwards, Shamei de Komar, he then heard the fellow who was praying saying as follows, O Ihu Lemus Mikamo. Now, here you can see we have a person that was really fixated on a particular girl, particular woman. And he says, he now prays as follows, Ihu Lemus Mikamo. Either I should die in front of, before her, or she should die before me. Now this is a little bit abstract, so a little vague, so we look in the Gemara, that is in the Rashi, we're looking at the Rashi, let's look at it together, about halfway down the Rashi, Omar. The beginning of the Rashi line says, Omar, ilo mitzvah, if I don't end up marrying her, o ihi tomus mikamoi, so my prayer is that she should die before me, delo echsi, kad mitzvah l'acher ve'etzayrbo, I shouldn't see her married to someone else, and that will cause me frustration, cause me pain. O ihu atzmoi yomus mekami detinsibo ihi liidoch, or that he should die before she marries so and so. So he's in effect praying that he should die. In effect, it could be very soon. He should die before she ends up marrying someone else. Ulahachi ma'ares v'moid, and it's with this in mind that Rava said a man should marry on the holiday. Shelo yikadmenu acher berachamim shetomus he. So that through the prayers, if he marries on Chol HaMoed, so then that will solve this fellow's problem and prevent the woman that he was praying about dying so soon. So once again, the idea being that if a person, let us say, has his eyes on a particular woman, and he offers her kiddushin, and she accepts, we allow that on Chol HaMoed, because otherwise he could end up praying that she should die before she ends up marrying someone else. So in the face of this, we'll call it the potential prayer, we allow the person to marry the woman, the girl that he so desires, so that he shouldn't end up issuing such a prayer that would end up in her dying before she ends up marrying someone else. We continue in the Gemara. Omar, we should point out, by the way, we have another marking. Just to finish off the story, Omar Lay, after this fellow changes the Nusach HaTfilah that we saw, Rava then said, Lav aminoloch, did I not tell you, lo tiboy alo de milsa hochi, that you shouldn't pray this way? But nevertheless, we see from this story that there's power in prayer, and one shouldn't pray like we saw. One shouldn't pray for a specific person to marry. One should not pray that either he should die or she should die before the marriage to someone else takes place. But with all that having been said, we allow marriages to take place during Chol HaMoed so as to thwart or to deter or prevent this prayer situation from arising. Now, the diamond is featured on the side under the Mivneh heading. These are Memros Shel Rav Mishum Reb Ruvain Ben Itzrubuli, the series of comments that are made by Rav quoting Rebbe Ruvain. We open up with a comment that takes a couple lines, and we mentioned this before. Omar Rav Mishum Rebbe Ruvain Ben Istrabuli. Min HaTorah Neviim and Ksuvim. You find in the five books of Moses and the Torah and the prophets and in the later writings, May Hashem Isha Leish. It is from Hashem. It is ordained by God which woman marries which man. Where do we see this? Min HaTorah Dechtiv. In the Torah you see Vayan Lovon Ubusil Vayomru. Lovon, who was the brother of Rivka, who married Yitzchak, and her father Besuel, Vayomu, and they said, May Hashem Yotza Davar, it's from God that she should marry Yitzchak. Min Hanavim, we see in the prophets, Tertiv, Yaviv Imoi, Lo Yodu, Ki Me Hashem He. the story involving Shimshon, and his father and his mother did not know that she, the woman in the story involving Shimshon, was destined to be with Shimshon. That was from Hashem. Min haksuvim dechtiv, bayis v'ho nachas ovos u'mehashem isha maskoles. It is from Hashem that a man gets a specific woman. The Omar Rav Mishum Rabbi Reuven ben Asrubuli, the Amri Lo b'Masisatan. Another version is that it's taught in a Tanaic source. Omar Rabbi Reuven ben Asrubuli, instead of Rav quoting Rabbi Reuven, a Tanaic source presents Rabbi Reuven ben Asrubuli saying, "Ein Odom Nechshad B'Davar Elo Im Kain Asao." A person does not fall under suspicion. Now Rashi says Nechshad B'Davar Avera. The term Avera is translated superficially as a sin, as a violation of law. However, in many cases, the word Avera is simply a veiled reference to immorality. So a person is not suspect of Avera unless he actually did it. In other words, even if people didn't see it, Why is it that people fall under suspicion? Why are rumors made about such things? So it's because he must have really done it. Vim lo asa kulo asa miksasun. If he didn't go all the way, he did part of it. Vim lo asa miksasun here believe asasun. Even if he didn't do any physically, but it was a person that was thinking about doing it. Vim lo here believe asasun ro achirim shaasai. He saw others engaging in immorality or in the sin, and he enjoyed that. He was happy for them, and as a result of any of these possibilities, it should come as no surprise that someone is then suspect of or suspected of Avera. As the Gemara continues, a new geometric form appears, a series marking, and on the side we have a mivneh, where the house shape is featured, kushos ala klal hana. We're going to now challenge this klal. You know, we have said then, till now, that a person who is suspect of avera, there's some element of it that really exists. Mosiv Rabbi Yankiv. Vayechapu bnei Yisrael dvorim asher lo kein al Hashem Elokehem. Here you see the aspersions being cast on the Almighty for things that never happened. So the Gemara says, "Hosam lahachis udavod." That's an exception. That's a case where they had the intention of irritating and rebellious intentions. Lach means to enrage. So where someone acts, where people start saying things with the intent to enrage, that's not what we were talking. We were talking about the unintentional rumor reputation scenario. However, where people are in a premeditated fashion casting aspersions in order to enrage, that is something else. Toshma vayikanu lemoishe b'machne l'aron kadosh Hashem. That's a posuk. Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchok Omar, and Rav Shmuel explains what this posuk means, is malame that teaches us shekol echad kine li'ishto mimoishe. The word kine means warning. And you find this in the context of Parsha Sota. Sota is the woman suspected of immorality, and that suspicion arouses her husband to warn her not to be with so and so. Now, what do we see here? That women all over were being suspect of engaging in intimacy with Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, you can rest assured, is not someone that was engaged in any form of immorality, and he would not even have viewed it and been happy with it. And yet we see that people suspected their wives of being in intimacy with Moshe Rabbeinu. So you see, contrary to Reb Ruvain's teaching, that a person can be suspect of immorality even without any of the above mentioned reasons. The Gemara answers, Hosam mishum sina hud avud. Those who were casting aspersions on their wives vis-a-vis Moshe Rabbeinu were doing so out of hate to Moshe. So again, there's an external motivation. It was not the, we'll call it the unintended simple creation of reputation. Toshma, Omar Rabbi Yossi, Yehei Chalki imi shechushtin oisoi bedovar v'ein bo. Rabbi Yossi says, I should merit having the portion, being amongst those that are suspect of sin and are not guilty of it. The Omar Rapapa l'didi chashtun v'lo havubi. Rapapa says, I was suspect. I fell under suspicion and I hadn't violated anything. So what do we see here? We see that people can be suspect even if they did nothing. So is this not a challenge to Rabbi Reuven's teaching? Lo kasha. No, it's not a question. Ha bekola de posik, ha bekola de lo posik. Kola is the coil, is the murmurings, the reputation. De posik means that stops. It was for a short while and then stopped. That's indicative of there's nothing to it. In other words, an empty rumor with no basis whatsoever. However, there's the kola de lo posik, the coil, the voice, the sounds, the murmurings that continue there. We say there is something to it. The kola de lo posik ad kama, when we speak about the continuing rumors, how long is that? Omar Abaye, Omar Li, Omra Li Aim. Abaye says in the name of his aim, of his foster mother, he says, Dumi Damaso Yumo Palga. The murmurings in town is considered of some substance if it lasts a day and a half. And now we have a marking that will help us keep track of where we stand. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a Mivneh structure note. With the triangle facing up, we're saying, Yesh Bosis Lachshosh Sh'ovar. There is a basis for thinking that there was some element of sin. The inverted triangle is the opposite. Ein Lachshosh. There is nothing to think. There is nothing to suspect. So the Gemara says, "Vahani mili de lo posik beini ubeini." We say that if the murmurings lasted for a day and a half, there is basis to suspect. That's provided it was constant for a day and a half. They constantly spoke about it. There was no break in it. Avo posak beini beini less lon ba. But if there was a break, so then it shows there is nothing to it. Vahi posak beini beini, and when there was a break in the murmurings, lo amoron ela de lo posak machmas yira. We say that, and now notice the inverted triangle indicates that we're saying there's no basis. That's provided that the posak, the break in the murmurings, was not as a result of fear. Avo posak machmas yira lo. If there were murmurings, and there was a break because they all of a sudden became scared, well, that doesn't show there's nothing to it. There still very well might be something to it, but they felt threatened, and that's why they stopped their murmurings. V'lo amoron, elo delo hoder novan. And that which we said that there is no basis for suspecting because of a kola de posak, it was murmurings that stopped, that's provided it didn't resurface. Avol hoder novet lo, but if it resurfaced, if the murmuring started up again later, then we don't say there is total innocence. Velo amoron and that which we say that there is what to be suspect of, elo de les lei oivim, that the person concerning whom the rumors are being cast is someone that has no enemies. Avol is lei oivim, if a person is controversial, he has enemies, he has detractors. It's his detractors that are promulgating the evil speech. And as far as the general public is concerned, when they hear those things, they should take it, as they say, with a grain of salt. The Mishnah. Ein kosvin shtarei chov b'moyed. We don't write documents of debt, where someone loans money to friend of his. So the shtar, the document that testifies to such a loan having taken place, we don't write that on Chol HaMoed V'Eino Ma'amino. If the creditor, the malve, the one who's loaning the money, doesn't trust the loave, o she'ein loy ma yoichal, or if you have a situation where the scribe who would be writing doesn't have any money, and by his writing it now on Chol HaMoed, that will be the reason for you to pay him and have now money to live off of on Chol HaMoed, hare ze yichtov. Those would be circumstances under which it could be written. Ein kosvin sforim tefillin u'mezuzos b'moed. We don't write holy scrolls, phylacteries, nor mezuzos on Chol HaMoed. V'ein magiyin ois achas afilu b'sefer Ezra. And we don't correct even one letter, even if it's the sefer of Ezra. Now, Rashi has two pshatim. It's either sefer Torah of Ezra. Ezra was the leader of the Jewish people at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash period. But there's another girsa that instead of Ezra with an aleph at the end of the word, you would have a hey at the end of the word. Azora. Azora means the sefer of the Beis Hamikdash, the Beis Hamikdash courtyard sefer Torah, which was the basis of all other sifrei Torah. So even if that sefer needs to be repaired, and the letter needs to be fixed, we do not do so on Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Koisev Adam Tefillin U'Mezuzos Li'atzmo. If a person needs for himself Tefillin or Mezuzos, so a person can write them. Rashi says, "La'atzmu l'kayim zeh hamitzvah, avol l'tzibur limkor." But to write it for the public to sell, that one cannot do. But for oneself, so one can write tefillin and mezuzos. We continue at the top of Yutes Amud Aleph. The Toive al Yerechoi Tcheles l'tzitzison. And he can also spin the wool that will eventually be made into tzitzis. But he must do it al yirecho. He spins the wool on his leg, on his thigh, and that is an unusual way of doing it, as opposed to the normal way that one would do it between his fingers using a spindle. So he's doing it with a shinui, in a changed way, an unusual way. That is reason for this allowance. The Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. And we have a topic heading on the side. Deois Tanoim. We'll see different Tanaic opinions. B'ksivas Tefillin and Mezuzos B'Chol HaMoed, regarding the writing of Tefillin and Mezuzos on Chol HaMoed. When we speak about writing of Tefillin, of course, everyone knows that the Tefillin are two boxes, black boxes, one on placed on one's head and one placed on one's arm. But within those boxes, there are capsules of parchment with different sections of the Torah written on them. So we're talking about the writing of the tefillin and the mezuzahs, of course, on Chol HaMoed, and tviyas tzitzis b'chomer, the spinning of the wool for tzitzis on Chol HaMoed. Tonu Rabbanan, the Gemara at the top continues with a Tanaic source. Koisev Adam tefillin and mezuzahs li'atzmo. A person can write for personal needs tefillin and mezuzahs on Chol HaMoed. V'toiva al yirecho tchilas tzitzis, when he can spin wool on his thigh on Chol HaMoed. La'achirim betova, divrei Rabbi Meir, and one can prepare for others, provided he's doing it for no pay, that betova for free. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, merim u'moicher es shelo v'chozer v'koseiv la'atzmo. A person can use subterfuge. ma'arim, a trick, subterfuge, and in effect sell what he already has that was prepared from before Yom Tov. So now he is without. He doesn't have tefillin. He doesn't have a mezuzah. And we've seen there's leniency when it comes to writing for oneself. So one can do this trick and then basically benefit from getting money for it, for selling, and also having his own. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Koisev Umocher Kedarko Kedei Parnasos. Rabbi Yossi doesn't need subterfuge. He says you can write and sell in the normal way for profiting on Cholomoyed. Ori Le Rav Le Rav Chananel. Ori teaches, he instructs. That's Rav instructs Chananel. V'yami lo, another version by way of names. Rav Abarachano Le Rav Chananel. It's either Rav is commanding Rav Chananel or Rav Abarachano. Commanding or teaching the Koisev Umocher Kedarko Kedei Parnasos. So this is what we saw in the name of Rabbi Yossi. Tonu Rabbon V'toival Yerecho Teiles. Here we speak about the preparation of tzitzis, of the wool for tzitzis. Tonu Rabbon V'toival Odom Al Yerecho Teiles L'tzitziso. A person can spin the fibers that create the strings, the strands for the tzitzis. He can spin them together on his leg. Avalo be'evin, divrei Rebbe Eliezer. Provided he doesn't use a stone, the stone was used as a weight to ease, to assist in the spinning process. So since we're talking about doing this during Chol HaMoed, Rav Elazar says not to use the stone. The Chachamim afbev, and the Chachamim are more lenient, and they say you can use the stone weight as well. And Rav Yehuda Oimer Mishmoi, Rav Yehuda says in his name, be'evan avolo be'pelech. You can use the stone, but not a pelech. A pelech was the official, the standard device that was used in spinning wool. V'chachomim omrim bein be'evan, bein be'pelech. And the chachomim have no restrictions. You can use the stone, you can use the pelech as well. Omar of Yudah, Omar Shmuel, v'chein Omar of Chiyo bar Abba, Omar of Yochanan, halocha bein be'evan, bein be'pelech. So he rules regarding the tzitzis with the most lenient approach, that you can spin the wool either using a stone or the pelech device. Valocha, regarding the writing of the svarim and mezuzahs, we saw before the Gemara rules koisev kedarko umoicher kedei parnasoso. Another ruling of leniency, like that of Rabbi Yossi before, that you can write and sell in the regular fashion. And Kedei Parnasoso, Rashi, three lines from the top, explains, Bahar Vocha, for profit. V'lo Mayri B'mi She'ein Lo Mayocha. We're not talking about someone that doesn't have with what to survive. He has. He's selling for profit. He's allowed to do this on Chol HaMoed. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, in order to access Mark and Morris, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.